Hello and welcome to another podcast here for the South Florida Media Network. And of course, by now, all Dolphins fans everywhere are running through the streets, buying jerseys. I believe that the name Tagovailoa will be the most selling jersey in the NFL. And before we get into anything, I am joined here by Eric Wiedeke, fellow writer here and student at FIU. And we'll be getting into all the picks here that the Dolphins made, all by, you know, the three picks that we made here in the first round. And then, of course, if any of you guys were following my live tweeting throughout the night, I want to thank you guys for the support there. And, of course, I want to give a shout-out to Chuck Strauss, Monica Lebro, Monica, I don't know how to say your last name, who was doing the retweeting for me through SFMN, and everyone, you know, Natalia, who is one of the editors, Beatriz, everybody, for, you know, having a great draft day. But Eric, hopefully also didn't leave anybody out. We're excited in Miami. The Miami Dolphins have drafted Tua Tagovailoa. Say that so many times, you get your tongue twisted. And it's a joyous day in Miami. How do you think the Dolphins fans are feeling right now?
I think the Dolphins fans are feeling revitalized. Well, I can't say that because if it's anything like our draft party, it was like after the fifth pick, it was just one long exhale, and because we had you know gotten ourselves up in arms over the potential of selecting Herbert or any other pick or any other selection at the fifth pick, that we got ourselves so worried and so amped up that once Tua got selected, it was like, okay, we can relax now. We got our guys. So I think tomorrow we'll be able to more properly celebrate. Today's just about the release of the tension and the it's the finally stress. Over. We yeah. got him. Yeah, we don't have to think about it anymore. We've got our franchise quarterback.
Right. And I think it's great. It's done and finally we can all be stress-free. Of course, I've written before about how I believe that the Dolphins should draft Justin Herbert, and a lot of what I was going off was a quote that had come around from Bill Parcells, which was, availability is the best ability. However, I think that the pick of Tua is a slam dunk. I cannot lie. And hopefully he continues to show what he can do from his college level here to the NFL level. But we have some audio here from the Miami Dolphins. Chris Greer is the phone call that he gave to Tua, and we're going to play it for you guys so you can hear it in case you haven't. This is Chris Greer talking to Tua Tagovailoa and Tua's response as he has known that he would be a Miami Dolphin.
Tua, hey, it's Chris Greer. Chris Greer from the Dolphins. How you doing, man? Yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, we're on the clock right now, so... I said, hey, well, we enjoyed getting to know you through the process and, love how you play on the field and how you carry yourself off the field, the type of person you are in player, and we're excited here at Miami Dolphin, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks,
Chris. Yeah. Hey, you did a great job and, you know, attacked everything and like you did and, love your story and done a lot of work on you. And, Coach Flores, our owner, Steven Ross, you're going to phone with him next. And we couldn't be more excited to have you here, man. So, hey, this is step one.
So, step one, right then and there. And I would have loved to get audio from Brian Flores. I'm sure by the time that we wake up later on here down the road on Friday, we'll have actual concrete, maybe some calls from there. And I think that we'll all be happy to see that, especially from Coach Flo. I know that we've all had our thoughts about Tua. We've all had our thoughts about Herbert and Love and every quarterback that could have possibly been around. And we've all dived into, you know, every single possibility that could have ever happened. I know I did an article about it with a mock draft from the Pro Football Network mock draft simulator, detailing, you know, the Jordan Love draft, pretty much the draft best player available at number five. Instead, they draft Tua at five. He's their guy. And you got to applaud the Miami Dolphins for what they've done this offseason, right?
Oh, yeah. I think you know, when you look at what they did in free agency, you know, they go out and they improve their defense, you know, by a lot. They get Byron Jones, they get Kyle Van Noy, Shaq Lawson, Emmanuel Ogba. And those guys were big additions to the defense. There's an adage in football, buy a defense and draft an offense. That's part of what they did. Of course, they got Noah Igbinogu. I've been pronouncing it well all night.
One of the hardest names. I know we were trying to do that.
Igbinogany.
Yes.
There we go. I had been pronouncing it all day correctly until just then. They go out and they get him with their last pick in the first round. But they get their left tackle and they get their quarterback. I do think they will address tackle more. But, you know, I think the Dolphins came away with a really good first round. I'm very, very happy with it.
I'm guessing that one of the guys that might be addressed in the second round, you're assuming it's probably going to, with that tackle position, maybe you look at a guy like Ezra Cleveland or Lucas Niang. And then, of course, in the later rounds, maybe you look at a running back. Do you think that the Dolphins should try to go for a positional player at number 39? Maybe you target a guy at safety. Of course, Antoine Winfield Jr., his father, Antoine Winfield Sr., one of Brian Flores' favorite players ever. He's raved about him. Or do you go out and you make sure you get that other tackle and offensive lineman like an Ezra Cleveland or a Lucas Niang?
Right. I mean, I think it depends on how the board falls. I'm a strong proponent of best player available, typically speaking, you know, within reason, obviously. Like, if corner is best available at 39, you're not taking another corner. But at the same time, you know, the Dolphins have a lot of holes still. So I think they can afford to be flexible with their picks. They have a lot of picks in the back end of the draft, you know, starting in the fourth round. So I think they have the flexibility, A, to pick whichever guy they want to at 39, whether that's offensive tackle or safety or running back or even interior defensive line or edge rusher. You know, Yetur Gross-Matos is still on the board. So I think you look at those guys and then they can just, you know, Chris Greer said, we can do what we want. And I agree with him. They've got a lot to address. They can go in a million different ways, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the selection on the board, I know that we were together for the draft, and all the entire night, everything we kept saying after the Tua pick was, oh, my God, this board. Oh, my God, the board. Holy crap, the board is falling for the Dolphins in a way that, like, it is a stunner. And, I mean, just to list some names that are still available that could have potentially been first-rounders, you have Josh Jones, you have Jeff Gladney, you have AJ Epinesa, of course, YGM, Yetur Gross-Matos, Antoine Winfield, Grant Delpit, Xavier McKinley, Ezra Cleveland was talked about as a potential first-round pick for the Dolphins later on in the tail end of the first round. DeAndre Swift was one of them, Jonathan Taylor possibly, J.K. Dobbins possibly, and then there was talk that maybe Denzel Mims might have been picked in the first round by one of the teams that did pick a wide receiver. I think the Dolphins truly, and you said it there, Chris Greer said, we can do whatever we want. It's exactly what they can do, whatever the hell they want. They can do anything. And it puts them in such a crazy position to fill whatever hole they want to fill, to draft best player available if they need to. Personally, at 39, and I said it before with, you know, his father being one of Brian Flores' favorite players ever, I love Antoine Winfield Jr., and I would think it would be a slam dunk pick at 39. And I'm still kind of surprised that he didn't go in the first round. If you had a choice of the litter, you know, there's in that second round there, who's your go-to guy at number 39?
Oh, man, go-to guy at number 39. Yetur Gross-Matos, if he's there. I think you need to add more pass rush to this defense. They did add Emmanuel Ogba, they did add Shaq Lawson, Kyle Van Noy. All those guys are decent pass rushers. But I think Yetur Gross-Matos could be a really, really good pass rusher. I wanted Caleb Von Chase on at 18 when they did ultimately select Austin Jackson. So I wasn't, but I wasn't upset about the Jackson pick. I think Jackson was fine where he was. But that said, I do think an edge rusher needs to be taken. I think the selection of Igbinoghene kind of takes the pressure off of taking a defensive back. But if Matos isn't there, I think Winfield would be my second selection.
What about, you know, if AJ Epenesa falls there as well? Like, let's say that it's YGM and Epenesa are the two there. Do you have that preference with YGM over Epenesa?
I do. Epenesa doesn't necessarily have the... I don't know. I'm worried about his lack of athleticism at the next level as a pass rusher. I think he can be good against the run, given his athleticism, and you know you don't need to be the fastest guy in the world to set the edge on the outside. But I wonder about his ability to beat offensive tackles with his first step. So, you know, I think just because I'm looking more for a pass rusher than a run stopper, so I think Yusuf Gross Matos fits that a little bit better.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. And it's funny because I feel like throughout the entire draft process, YGM was one of those guys that was linked heavily at 26 to the Dolphins. And then it just slowly he started to fade into that second round and out of the first completely. I think it would be a great pick for the Dolphins at 39 if, you know, some of those top guys are there or top guys are taken. And then at 56, I think there's just a lot of there's anything is possible, right? You have those two first round picks and then you have 70 to start third round. Do you go with 56? Maybe you tackle, let's say, you know, one of those running backs there, or do you continue to wait for a running back?
I think it depends on how the board falls. As it stands right now, all the top three wide receivers, or at least the top three running backs, the consensus top three, are still on the board. So you look at that. But at 56, I think if I were to prioritize a position, I would prioritize tackle over running back, if you had to ask me. And then I think at 70, you could still get a solid running back. They have Jordan Howard, and I think that's a really underrated part of it. Because you look at Jordan Howard. Jordan Howard's really steady, and he's a really good runner of the football. So I think that's going to take pressure off of any rookie that they get. So they don't necessarily need a guy to be a three-down back right away. And at 70, I think you're going to be looking at your choice of Cam Akers and maybe even one of the top three running backs.
So you think with that 56, you want to go around there, and you mentioned Cam Akers. Of course, I've raved about LaMichael Perine at that position. Do you think maybe there's a potential either at 56 or 70, let's say they go running back with 39 instead? Do you think that they try to tackle, you know, one of those edge rushers then and there? I mean, you're assuming by then you're looking at guys like Jonathan Grenard, Malik Harrison, Terrell Lewis, and Zach Bond if they're still available. But Bond will probably go in that top end of the first round, or sorry, the second round. Do you think that they do that? You know, they go edge rusher first and then running back, or do you think that they'll try to make sure they get one of those top edge rushers that come that fell out of the first round into the second?
Well, I think it's a matter of importance and how they value it. They did address their pass rush a little bit, so it wouldn't surprise me to see them go with another offensive lineman before they decide to go edge rusher. Because, you know, Kyle Van Noy had 7.5 sacks last year. Shaq Lawson had 7.5 sacks. You know, I think even Emmanuel Agba had 6.5. So that's 21.5 sacks being added to the defense. And I know it doesn't work like that, but it does represent a significant boost to the pass rush of this offense of this defense. And so I think that getting another offensive lineman is probably higher up on the hierarchy of needs, but you know, I would definitely, with one of the second rounders, address edge.
I'd have to agree. And obviously my preference is Jonathan Greenard in terms of that edge rusher. I think my preference would be, though, at 39 to go with the running back. I mean, if DeAndre Swift gets to you, if one of those teams, maybe if, like, let's say the Rams try to trade up or the Patriots pull a fast one, and you assume maybe the Patriots will go with offensive tackle unless they trade down again. Or Bengals even. I mean, you never know what's going to happen with any of those guys that are in front of us. It's Panthers, Patriots, Giants, Lions, Colts, and Bengals all up front. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But if DeAndre Swift's there at 39, I think that's one of the guys you end up picking, even if it's in that high end of the second round. I know we talked about it at the beginning, talked about the happiness of Tua, and I think the video that is on the PFN podcast Twitter, which I've mentioned multiple times, is probably one of my favorite videos that I've ever recorded from my cell phone. That reaction that you and Ozzy Delgado, co-owner of PFN, you know, you guys were ecstatic, and Dolphins fans everywhere have been ecstatic. You know, is it with Tua? And I know, for me or for anyone else that hasn't been high on Tua because of injuries, or because there's some people that say that he can't play it, and those people are ridiculous. But how can you describe the feeling of getting Tua, and the feeling for anyone that might not understand it? I guess the feeling of getting him, is this really just that pick that it looks like this is finally our time?
Okay. So my best way of describing it is, let's say you haven't eaten in like 2 or 3 days, right? Tua is the meal that you see after that long time of being so hungry, of starving. Tua is the meal. He is the oasis in the desert of quarterback play that was the Miami Dolphins. It's like the end of a drought with rain. Any kind of really painful long wait coming to an end you can imagine, that is how I feel about Tua. And I think that's how most of the fan base feels about Tua.
So for me, it'd be like, you know, if Donald Glover decides to go back to being Childish Gambino and produced a bunch of rap albums and warmed my heart. But I think you put it perfectly. I think another one, like, I would say, I think you could, that's perfect. Actually, I can relate it right to music. You know, anyone who has an artist that they love, and let's say they've been deprived of their music for a long time, no releases, and then all of a sudden they come out with an album and it's a banger, and you listen to it for years and years and years. I think that type of love and goosebumps is what you find with Tua. But even then, throughout the draft process, even if you were someone like me who were concerned about the injuries but still said, you know what, if he's picked by the Dolphins, I'm rooting for him no matter what, because I trust the people who are in charge. And I think what they've done over the offseason has shown why every Dolphins fan should trust who we have in charge. If he was that pick, and everything that was coming out about Tua, with everything, you still were like, you know, if he's the pick, if that's the guy, if we get what we want, it's going to just, it'll be a breath of fresh air. It'll be something where we, as Dolphins fans, as everything, will be, you know, happy and finally at like some peace. You know, I know I was joking around so much about wanting Dolphin Swear to just burn one last time, because I kept saying after tonight, we were never going to fight about something like this again. We'd be fighting about players in the late 20s and early 30s rather than fighting about someone in the early first 10 picks of the draft. And that's because, you know, I just truly believe who's in charge. I think for me, it's still Tua is the guy, and he's talented, and hopefully he can be that dude that just leads the Dolphins to the promised land, because that's something that younger Dolphins fans, older Dolphins fans, people like us in our early 20s, and everyone at FIU who roots for the Dolphins, born and bred Miami, you know, are the ones who say, finally, this is our guy, and finally we deserve it, you know? After years and years and years of stress and struggle, we deserve to finally have that guy. Are there any last comments you'd want to make about the guys that we picked other than Tua here in the first round?
I think just judging off of maybe not, okay, I don't want to hijack here, but maybe not about the guys, but just a little tidbit that I did notice a little bit. I'm sure we're going to hear things about Noah Igbinoghene as we get to know him better as a Dolphin.
Great pronunciation.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But a common theme so far in the Brian Flores era with draft picks is they're all really high character guys. Obviously, it's noted how great of a teammate Tua was at Alabama. We have the story about Austin Jackson, you know, and donating bone marrow to his sister. And that
a perfect maybe 12 out of 12 even, match, 25% chance.
Exactly, you know. And maybe even that being the reason why some of his tape last year was a little subpar. But, you know, obviously human life is much, much, much more important than that. And we're going to hear about Noah Igbinoghene. But it really seems to me that Brian Flores, that's one of his big things, is you have to pass the character test for him. And I'm a fan of that, honestly. I think that's a refreshing thing to see as well, that Brian Flores is bringing in guys that he knows fits into the culture down here. And that's one of the things that makes me really hopeful for the direction of the team, is that I think they're getting guys that they know are going to buy in.
I love what you said there. Hope. I think the best thing that Tua brings to every Dolphins fan, and it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for him to, you know, live up to the standard that Dolphins fans are going to put him to and put him through. But the biggest thing is hope. Every Dolphins fan now, young, old, everyone just has hope. And we're all just going to be sitting here excited and ready to see him walk out into Hard Rock Stadium for the first time. And then hopefully in the future, we get to see him in the permanent throwback jerseys. Please, please make that happen. That's what we can leave off on. Again, a huge thank you to everybody at SFMN, everyone who reads, listens to all of our stuff. We appreciate you guys a lot. And we will continue to push out content. And I'm sure you'll see a lot more of Eric, not just with his one mocking the consensus. I'm sure you'll see a lot more of Eric as well here on SFMN. So hopefully we continue to bring more podcasts and get back up to speed with everything. But we hope you guys have been enjoying a lot of the written content. And I'm not going to say I'll see you again, but hopefully we see you sometime soon.